And now, it's time for our weekly news round, Lutheran Radio News with Paul Hill.
Fireworks at Luther Tyndale Synod. Now there's a headline to suck you in if ever you heard one. No doubt you have visions of pastors rolling around the floor, clutching each other warmly by the throat with wreckage scattered everywhere. No, you are thinking of the Barnes Conference. I ought to reassure you, this is one of the nicest and gentlest synods I have ever attended. But there were fireworks. More on that later. The 68th Annual Synod took place at Luther Tyndale Memorial Church on Friday the 28th and Saturday the 29th of October with the theme, The Steadfast Love of the Lord Never Ceases. This was a post-COVID normal synod, in person, bodies on seats, with Zoom watchers but no actual Zoom input, for what seemed like ages. After the opening service with Chairman George Samyats as liturgist and Pastor Wade Bellersback doing the sermon, the first order of business was charging the delegates. I'm never quite sure if this is going to be a demand for cash being run at or just promising to do our best. Fortunately, it was the latter. There were greetings from Luther Tyndale, the host, Australia, South Africa and Sweden. Doreen Rosser, our secretary, had the unenviable task of reading through the epic Executive Council report, which, as you can imagine, showed a very busy year indeed for this dedicated group of people. The restructuring of the ELCE has been spoken about, worked on, chewed over, sometimes spat out, and developed and finally adopted. We have a name change too. From the Evangelical Lutheran Church of England, we are now the Evangelical Lutheran Church in the United Kingdom. We will just need wider-headed paper, that's all. Resolution 3, Terms and Conditions for ELC Pastors and Employees, was presented by Pastor Jamie Krieger on behalf of the Executive Council. There were concerns expressed about having two categories of employees, new and old. There was a lot of discussion, and Pastor Ehlers said that we need to realise that when we become a CIO, we become the employer. He also said, currently the person who signs your core document is the person who employed you. So Paul Hill is my employer. Pastor Samyats was heard to mutter, that explains a lot. An amendment of whereas the Terms and Conditions Handbook is a de facto employment contract was passed. Discussion resumed with Pastor Ehlers saying we should be united as we can and it is a legal responsibility to accept or reject these conditions as we will have a new employer. A vote was made and passed. Resolution 4 on the setting up of a health and safety committee was read through by Pastor Krieger. This is to function after the restructuring of the ELCE to prevent any legal breaches or risk to individuals in our churches and to ensure that our sites are safe to work in and visit, health and safety being correctly carried out in all ELCE sites. After discussion on the practicalities for the committee, a vote was taken and the resolution passed. Resolution 5, a one-off cost of living assistance for pastors of £500 to help towards gas and electric bills, was then discussed to be voted on the next day. Generally speaking, the pastors appreciated the effort in helping them to pay the worryingly high cost of fuel bills. A payment of £500 would be paid through payroll and thus taxable. It was pointed out that the payment was not consistent and did not take inflation into account. And what would happen if the congregation couldn't afford it? What if the pastor didn't want it? That was answered by saying the pastor could simply pay it back in and also claim gift aid. Another point was made that the pastors being taxed on it as source could affect their tax status. Jeff Gowers gave an interesting and detailed report from the Congregational Life Committee. He spoke with enthusiasm and warmth about the popular retreat at Launde Abbey and encouraged us all to be early birds and get booked in for next year's retreat, April 21st to the 23rd, 2023. Pastor Tapanitsi Miyoki gave a brief report on the worship committee, which mainly due to the restructuring has had a quiet year. Pastor Arno Bessel's report from the Board for Overseas Missions, which caused interest in the challenge for the ELCE, a request from the Evangelical Lutheran Church of Ghana, which has sent a shopping list of several items, top of which was a much-needed motorbike. In discussion, it was felt that some congregations might like to select one of the seven items to purchase or perhaps club together to get something on their shopping list. Pastor Samyats delivered a brief report on the Commission of Theological and Social Concerns and the development of good relations between the ELCE, Finland, Sweden and Norway. Pastor Claudio Flohr said briefly that the Salary Review Committee had not had a meeting this year, but although emails had been exchanged, no real work had been done. Pastor Samioki gave a report for the Board for Youth, where 10 youngsters had gathered in Hertfordshire at Traeger Castle for a weekend of fun, worship and study. He particularly appreciated the financial support from congregations, which had kept costs to a minimum and enabled youngsters to come who perhaps otherwise could not. A youth rally is planned for February 23rd in 2023. Doreen Rosser gave an excellent report on the work of the Lutheran Women's League of Great Britain, who beaver away quietly and without fanfare in our congregations. Pastor Simeoki made the point that he wished more ladies would get involved as they enrich our church life. Pastor Krieger reported on Lutheran Radio UK, saying that in March it celebrated its 10th year of broadcasting around the world. The work is very hard for one man to do, but he appreciates your prayers, and if you have some money you don't need and are looking for something to support, .. The British Lutheran report was given by Pastor Simeoki, and he hoped that once the ELCE's restructuring was sorted out, don't we all, that the British Lutheran could be published more often. He also wants budding book reviewers to contact him. The nominations committee reported that all serving officers had agreed to continue in post until, yes, you guessed it, the restructuring was completed. The meeting of the ELCE Trust Limited began with Dr. Cindy Lumley presenting and explaining the many detailed points on the report and financial statements, including fielding questions on Holy Trinity and the loans involved there. After the Trust draft budget was voted on and passed, the Trust meeting was formally closed. Dr. Lumley then went through the ELCE finances as delegates went cross-eyed at the amount of work that had been loaded onto the treasurer's shoulders. She received a big thanks for being so diligent and skilled. Chater Allen, LLP, were reappointed as auditors in a unanimous vote. The first day then closed with a service of evening prayer. After the opening service the next day, Pastor Samietz then gave a chairman's report, and it is worth quoting the opening in full. "This is our seventh synod since I became ELC chairman 3 years ago, so I must be doing something wrong. Usually annual events, or in some churches, are held every 2, 3 or 4 years. To have 7 to 3 annual synods and 4 extraordinary synods, and that's not counting the reading days, reveals the desire of ELCE members, and that's people and congregation and auxiliaries, wanting the best for the ELCE for the 21st century." And that's the end of that intro. But just looking at the amount of those meetings is enough to make you wince, let alone the regular executive council meetings, phone calls, emails and letters, and the astonishing amount of travel and work involved in regular pastoral duties. If you are listening this far, take your hat off to these remarkable ladies and gentlemen who are so passionate about the word and building the ELCE up to be able to deliver it. Questions were asked about whether there was a possibility of a homegrown pastor one day. Students remain our best hope, but there are many talents needed before this can happen. Concern about aging pastors was raised, but that the restructuring has been so time-consuming that little else can be done until that's completed, but young men should be encouraged to serve us all. Dr. Lumley reported on Westfield House that they need to up its game with its advertising and profile online to attract new people. She also went through the finances and mentioned that there is some subsidence at number 30, with a drop in a bay window and a large crack inside. Might be a drain collapse, and it has to be dealt with, and will no doubt be expensive. Just before lunch, a group photo was called on the steps of Luther Tyndall. "I've seen less furtive people on the wanted posters at Bromley Police Station, but hey-ho, posterity is posterity." Resolution 5, the one about helping the pastors out with £500 for the energy bills, was discussed, and with an amendment was passed. The money needs to be paid before March the 23rd if a congregation chooses to enact it. The congregational reports were then called for, with the doings of various churches around the ELCE. All had many encouraging notes as we emerged from the dark days of COVID and returned for whatever passes for normalcy. So thus we came to the end of a very pleasant and harmonious synod, well-fed, well-informed, and slightly deafer after Pastor Didzis played his trumpet along with the hymns. But there was one more notable thing. As we belted out our final closing hymn, "A Mighty Fortress is Our God," fireworks exploded very loudly just outside the church. Pastor Ehlers declared that God had laid them on specially for us, and so he had. The COVID choir ban was based on flawed evidence, scientists have concluded after showing that a church outbreak early in the pandemic was not caused by a singing super spreader. On March 10, 2020, a rehearsal of the Skagit Valley Chorale in Mount Vernon, Washington, led to 52 of the 61 attendees becoming infected with coronavirus and two subsequent deaths. An investigation by Skagit County public health officials laid the blame at the door of a single chorister who turned up at a practice with symptoms and later tested positive for the virus. The published findings were instrumental in numerous countries banning choir and church gatherings on the grounds that indoor singing could easily spread the virus. The paper was cited in 772 other scientific papers and downloaded or viewed 618,000 times. But a review of the case by Nottingham Trent University, Brunel University and Brighton and Sussex Medical School has concluded that many of the choristers' symptoms started too early to be caused by the rehearsal. It now appears that, in a majority of cases, infection had occurred 2 to 4 days before the practice, demonstrating that coronavirus was already rife in the community. Professor Robert Dingwall, one of the authors, said, "There have been a lot of papers saying that choirs are dangerous and citing this paper without actually questioning the findings. It was one of the first reports, so it was very influential. But we looked at it and thought that the speed with which people were getting infected and displaying symptoms were not very plausible. It didn't fit the epidemic curve. This was a building designed for 120 with quite a high ceiling and doors opening and constant air movement. It doesn't make sense to imagine that there are these clouds of aerosols drifting around and being inhaled. It is plausible there are risks in packed indoor spaces, but the risks of ordinary supermarkets, shops or church gatherings have probably been exaggerated." The team said it was not criticising the original investigation, but said the incident had continued to be used for a reason for indoor restrictions, even when new evidence emerged questioning airborne spread in well-ventilated buildings. Bristol University has shown that the infectivity of airborne coronavirus can decrease by 90% within 20 minutes of exhalation. The same university also showed that singing does not produce substantially more respiratory particles than speaking at a similar volume. Professor Dingwall added, "Even in human challenge trials, where people have had the virus shoved up their noses, only about half get infected. There is very solid evidence that humans do not like to get closer than a meter to each other if they can avoid it, and in normal circumstances our breath doesn't travel more than half a meter. More typically, the stuff you exhale will travel about 20 centimeters and it will tend to disperse upwards because it's hotter than the surrounding air." Britain banned indoor singing in March 2020, and it was 18 months before the prohibition was finally relaxed. The new findings, published in the journal Public Health, concluded the Skagit County choir outbreak does not provide authority for measures to restrict singing or to require face covering or physical distancing during indoor gatherings at a relatively low density with no special ventilation measures. The research was welcomed by Gareth Malone, the choir master and television presenter. "The outbreak in the Skagit Valley Chorale sent shockwaves around the singing world, and I'm sure singers everywhere will welcome the fact that this is being looked at again," he said. "Singing with others is so good for us in many ways, but some people are still fearful about singing because of COVID, and it's so important that we are constantly re-evaluating the evidence." The researchers said they hoped the paper would also exonerate the choir member who has spent more than 2 years believing he was responsible for the infection of dozens of people and two fatalities. They said it had been unethical for public health authorities to blame single sources for large outbreaks. In the Church of England, more bishops have come out in support of gay marriage after the Bishop of Oxford became the most senior Church of England cleric to call for a break with tradition. The Right Reverend Stephen Croft said that he wanted to acknowledge the acute pain and distress of LGBTQ plus people in the life of the church, and said that he was sorry his views on the same-sex marriage were slow to change and had caused genuine hurt, disagreement and pain. In his landmark declaration on the 3rd of November, which broke ranks with the church's current view on this issue, he said that as well as being able to conduct marriages for their congregation, clergy should also be allowed to marry a same-sex partner. Currently, according to canon law, no Church of England minister can bless or marry gay couples. However, a number of other senior clergy, including bishops, have joined Bishop Croft in publicly calling for the church to change on the issue. The Bishop of Worcester, the Right Reverend Dr. John Ing, a diocesan bishop, said the Bishop of Dudley, the Right Reverend Martin Gorick, a more junior suffragan bishop, have now publicly backed his cause. They published a joint letter on Twitter saying that in the interests of transparency, we think it's right to make our own beliefs and hopes plain. The Bishop of Reading, the Right Reverend Olivia Graham, praised Bishop Croft's contemplative, compassionate and courageous views on human sexuality and the Church, adding, "I agree." The Bishop of Buckingham, the Right Reverend Alan Wilson, also tweeted his thanks and warm congratulations for articulating an honest and godly view, while the Bishop of Dorchester, the Right Reverend Gavin Collins, tweeted his support and endorsement for the Church to support same-sex marriage. The Bishop of Oxford called for a change in canon law to allow same-sex marriages and said that gay Christians, including clergy, should have the freedom to marry same-sex partners and freedom to be sexually active within those marriages. He became the first serving senior bishop in the Church of England out of the two archbishops and 37 serving diocesan bishops to explicitly call for the Church to conduct same-sex marriages. His comments came as Church of England bishops are currently considering whether to recommend any changes to the centuries-old doctrine that only opposite-sex couples should marry. Next February, the bishops will present their long-awaited findings to the General Synod, and their recommendations could pave the way for an historic vote following decades of division. A spokesman for the Church of England Evangelical Council said that it rejects the theological argument in Bishop Stephen's essay. In contrast, Jane Ozan, an LGBT campaigner and member of the General Synod, welcomed Bishop Croft's comments as brave, prophetic step. And finally, Pastor Jamie had just had a grumpy tirade from one of his members, and as she left, he muttered, "She never tithes, but she always has her 2 cents worth."
My name is Paul Hill. Thank you for listening to Lutheran Radio UK. Lutheran Radio News will be back next Friday. Until then, every blessing to you and goodbye for now.